Riverbank Road. I didn't see it in any way as a kind of literary way to use words, but well, not even really poetic either. Just in a very particular, specific art way.
The words become kind of elements, and they become discrete meanings that work against other words.
Yes, I mean, it's like the line of words actually written on the page almost becomes like the line of my walk. For example, one of my sculptures was to cross Dartmoor and move along the walk, move one object to another object. And you can express that whole idea very well by using words, and it would be very complicated to try and maybe take a photograph of. In other words, it's the best way of actually expressing that work, is to use words. You know, like pine cone to sheep's turd, or, you know, jawbone to feather, stuff like that. It becomes a very pure way to express that work.
And one thing that, again, one notices in a lot of the photo pieces, well, all of them, in fact, is the very deliberate consideration of how they're photographed and how they're visually organised, which makes you very presumably concerned with perception and taking a fixed viewpoint, as opposed to, you know, the idea of sculpture being in the round and it can be seen from any point of view.
I think in 1967 I actually made a sculpture where the position of the spectator was part of the work, in fact. So the work was three elements. It was like a circle on a hillside, a black frame, and then the spectator. And the work came together when the three things were in line. But that was a very kind of formal work. But I think in general, I've tried to make my photographs just very, very straightforward, very simple and direct in the spirit of the work. I think, and also usually from, you know, my own eye level, you know, no aeroplanes, no fancy lenses. I think if you, I think that would distract the attention to the wrong place if I got into any. So I hope there's a kind of consistency of straightforwardness in my photograph, so that, you know, you end up by concentrating on the. I want the photograph, you know, the work in the photograph. And also, in a very practical way, as I said before, sometimes, you know, the best way to see, especially particularly a line sculpture, is by, you know, standing at one end and looking straight down it.
So when you use photography, and the photograph actually becomes the work?
Yes, it does. Yes, it becomes art in a different way. But it does become the photograph and the handwritten text underneath it, which, as I say, gives the photograph a different meaning than it would have if it was just a photograph.
One piece I've seen recently by you, which was a piece at Coracle Gallery, Coracle Press, of Avon Mudd, yeah. Actually pressed into a series of concentric circles with your hand. Yeah. Perhaps you could talk about this. I mean, does actually drawing with mud in its relationship to Avon and so on. I mean, this is a new series of groupings of work, or are they an extension of the other pieces?
The hand piece at Coracle was it's just a continuation of my other mud works. It's just that I've changed the procedure. I see those mud works as much about water in a way as about mud, because in fact there's always like a small quantity of mud, and then it's mixed with a lot of water. It's obviously more clear in the splash work that I did also, which was just to chuck a bucket of muddy water at the wall, and it sort of left a beautiful print of silt down the wall. Water is one of the themes of my work. For example, I've walked between the sources of rivers, or I've used the length of a river to be the length of a walk. Or I made a piece on Dartmoor where I drew a circle on the map, and then within that circle I walked on all the riverbeds, down all the riverbeds within that circle, so that I was using riverbeds as a footpath. I like the idea that when you make a walk along a road, you're tracing the way of a human record on the land. Whereas if you walk down a riverbed, you're following a sort of natural path. Mississippi River driftwood. 1,000 pieces of driftwood placed following the water line and along the walking line. Myrtle Grove, West Point Allahash, Diamond, Port Sulphur, Nairn, Tropical Bend, Empire, Buras, Triumph, Boothville, Venice, The Jump, Tidewater Camp. Going back to the mudworks, I suppose the River Avon was always a kind of potent influence in my childhood, you know, this big tidal river which has the second biggest rise and fall in the world in Bristol. I was always kind of like fascinated by the sort of beautiful mud banks of the river, and I suppose I've just ended up by making art out of it, you know, finding a way to turn it into my work. And also, talking about the handprints, my work has always been about my own physical scale. In a way, my walk is about my own strides, my own footprints. It's about how far I can walk in a day. So the footprints and the handprints, they relate, you know, they're all about the same person. It's always a human scale.
As opposed to any sort of geometric preconceived notion about how long you will walk or over what distance. I mean, it's very much related to you and your bodily capabilities and so on.
It is, yes. It's a description of myself in a way. Some works are patterned on maybe the rotation of the Earth, so that to see, for example, you know, to walk for 24 hours. So the starting point is 24 hours, but then the number of miles that you see that you've walked in the 24 hours is a description of yourself. So it's always the relationship between the natural phenomena of day and night, or the natural phenomena of the shape of the land, and myself.
So bodily articulation is kind of extended in natural articulations, such as night and day.
Yes, yes. I think my work really is just is about my senses, and then by extension, the people that see my work should remind them of their senses. It should, in a way, perhaps return people to like a reality which they're perhaps losing. I actually think that, you know, my work is very realistic. It's like a stone is a stone. It's not trying to be something else. It's not about anything else. It is what it is.
I mean, this comes back to what you seem to be saying time and time again about simplicity and directness and strength of statement.
Yes, I think that's all I would ask for. That seems to be the highest thing to aim for.
One other way in which you've worked is through the publication. I mean, you've actually been involved in a lot of publications, haven't you? I mean, what role or function do you see them as having?
Well, that's another way of putting the work out into the world. It just does that job. You know, it makes the ideas available to the people, you know, very cheaply and easily. I mean, the work is not about possession, so to say to know it is to possess it is not quite right. But it's like people can know a fact of life. It's that knowledge is common to everyone. No one actually possesses it on their own.
It just reminds me, I mean, what you're saying of Australian Aboriginal concepts, which don't actually include the concept of possession, but of place and location and site.
Well, I would hope my works were close to that same spirit, yes. It was never really my intention that my early landscape works could be owned or possessed. I mean, that's why I feel that, like the American land artists with their sort of emphasis on possession and ownership of the land, and really not being artists unless you had like so many thousands of dollars to actually make the art. I mean, I felt I never had any theories at the time, but I was always, obviously, must have been attracted to the idea that you could make art with almost no means at all. In the, you know, in the parts of the world which were free for everyone to use. So, I mean, in some sense, being English and being British, having these sort of great national parks, you know, like Dartmoor and, you know, the Highlands, that was kind of quite, I suppose that's quite an important point as well. Granite line, scattered along a straight 9-mile line, 223 stones placed on Dartmoor. I mean, also the kind of tradition in England of the countryside in some ways belonging to everyone, you know, that you can actually walk across fields as long as you respect the farmer's land and close gates and stuff like that. I mean, even some of the works where I mean, a lot of my walking pieces wouldn't be possible in America, for example, because they have a completely different attitude to the land. In fact, one of my works was so. I went to America because I had this idea to make a straight 100-mile walk on the landscape, which was like grassy plains, almost like a sea of grass. So I sort of hitchhiked up through South Dakota and Wyoming and Montana, and looking for this kind of landscape to make this work in. And one day I was going through down this track in Montana, and a farmer came out and told me that if I kept on down, like in another 100 yards, you know, the next farmer would shoot me dead on his land. So, in fact, I ended up by going over into Canada and making, which had the same landscape, but just had a different sort of mentality, and I felt a more relaxed kind of psychology, really, about me being there and making such a work. So,
I thought you were actually going to refer to, you know, perhaps, you know, a political reason why you wouldn't wish to make works in a particular country. I mean, for instance, if you were asked to make a work in South Africa, the fact that the landscape was there, but...
Yes, right, I haven't been there for that reason. I'm not a sort of really political person, but nevertheless I do think that art should have a kind of morality. But, I mean, definitely that example of South Africa is... regardless of the landscape, I wouldn't go there for that reason.
Presumably the politics of the landscape would be an element in the work.
Yes, yeah, sure.
Going on from that, when you go to... I mean, you live in Bristol, and presumably when you make works in England, you can feel an instant kind of sympathy for the context and surroundings. I mean, when you go to places like the Andes and remote deserts and so on, I mean, do you have a problem in really appreciating the actual significance of the space and the objects and elements within it?
Well, I remember the first time I went to East Africa in 1969. I did feel quite overwhelmed by the vastness and the difference of the landscape and the difference of the culture. The whole, I felt very small and insignificant and sort of European. I think it does take a long time to sort of really become absorbed into different landscapes and to kind of understand them in a way which has some meaning. I think it's something that I've learnt through experience to kind of become at one in a different landscape, in a new landscape, and become absorbed by it and get into a state of mind where I feel very relaxed and that I'm, you know, I'm not using it and I'm not making it the work in the wrong way. And but I think that's something that I've really had to learn. And you have to be in a landscape for you know, on a walk or something. You have to, it sometimes you don't maybe do a work until near the very end or something. It takes you that long to somehow come to terms with the differences and to try and understand it. One of the walks I made in Nepal recently was to brush a footpath. It ran through part of the forest, and with a leafy branch I cleared maybe 50 yards of the footpath of all leaves and twigs and everything. So it was just a bright earth image. So in a way that's a work which is right at the centre of the social life of the place. It's not a work which is removed from the people of the area. I mean, people will be passing and walking over that work as they go on their way. So in some ways I share, that's an example of the way that a work can share in the life of the local people rather than being removed from it.
I suppose when it comes to the natural landscape, it's both mysterious in the sense that the land is what really gave people sustenance, and their relationship to the land in the past was obviously very positive. So in one sense or another, there must be some sort of undercurrent of that there. But as well, there must be a feeling of civilized society, urban society, conspicuous by its absence, because now we have the means to actually put buildings and to put factories everywhere. So the fact that there aren't factories and buildings in a remote spot is based on some conscious decision by people living in an urban society.
I think these places are only mysterious to the people who don't know about them. You know, I'd say that most of the art world and a lot of art critics have kind of urban perceptions and urban sensibilities. So the things that I do, the places I go to them, it is mysterious and romantic. But in these places, there are sort of often people living there normal everyday lives, you know, like in Nepal, it's, you know, there's actually, it's quite well populated, and there, so it's not, I don't feel as though I'm making an escape. The world is like that in those places, and I use the world as I find it. I think it just depends on which, on where you're standing in the world, you know, what opinion you have of it, you know, what perception you have of it. In fact, most of the world is like the landscapes that I make the work in. It's only like a very small percentage of the world that actually looks like central London or New York. It just happens that that's where all the art is, and, you know, art is basically an urban culture. So I feel that my work is more about reality than other art.
When I said mysterious, I didn't really mean romantic. What I was really referring to was when you go around remote areas of Ireland, you sometimes, yes, well, very often see the remains of ruined cottages of people actually who once lived on the land and no, yes, more do, and that, yes, makes one start wondering about the people and about how they worked on that land and so on, and how they lived.
Yes, and I do too. The work doesn't precisely relate to those problems, I mean, if that's what they are. It's, I mean, I suppose you could say that I've actually found a way to go back into the land and use it in a different way from those farmers, and maybe those farmers couldn't use it, but I can. But that's not really my prime motive. I mean, I go there just because they're great places. I don't think my work is really about any kind of social stuff like that. I think one thing I am aware of is that, you know, the surface of the world is actually made up of all these different layers of civilizations, people who've used it in different cultures for different reasons all through the centuries. And whatever I do on the land is just like one more layer on these layers of marks, historical marks, and my marks will be in turn superseded by, you know, the marks of other people. So it's really just part of the human pattern on the surface of the world. It's, in other words, I take my place along on the same surface as all the other people. Some of the sculptures are impermanent, but they illustrate permanent ideas. For example, I might make a spiral of seaweed on a beach in Cornwall. Now that pattern itself will be washed away by the next tide. But the record of it through the photograph just demonstrates that the cycle of patterns of seaweed that is left by the tide in a natural way that have gone on for, you know, millions of years. So a lot of my work points to permanent natural cycles of life. But the work itself doesn't have to be permanent.
Because, as the work you've just described, isn't permanent. In fact, very often the impermanence is a feature or an element of the work. It's going to have a short lifespan.
Right. Well, it's a mirror of life itself, which is, I mean, we are impermanent. So in a way, it kind of, my work goes, it doesn't try and fight nature. It goes with it. You know, it goes with the elements, it goes with the seasons, it goes with the day and the night. It goes with its mortality. It's not trying to fight mortality.
There's a piece that you made, A Line Made by Walking, England 1967, where you seem to be pressing down daisies within a field.
Yes, that's, it's not actually, it's really a line which is visible because the grass is trodden down by my footsteps, and the flattened grass reflects the sunlight, so that's, the sunlight is actually making the mark. I think that work was an important work because it really revealed to me the idea that how visible the art is just depends on how many times you do it. So if you walk once across a field, you don't see the mark. And if you walk 50 times, you see the mark reasonably well. And if you walk 1,000 times, you make a very permanent mark. So it's, in a way, it gave me the idea that you could control the permanence or impermanence of any work in a very particular way, and that it was just as justified to make a walk once across a landscape, leaving virtually no trace. That's in a way exactly the same as walking 100 times across the landscape and leaving a trace. So I felt completely legitimate in making art which did not leave a mark. All that remains is that photographic image and the idea. A 5-day walk. First day 10 miles, second day 20 miles, third day 30 miles, fourth day 40 miles, fifth day 50 miles.
Time is a factor in the work. I mean, unlike a traditional piece of sculpture, which, well, is the object only.
Yes, it's time is in my work like time is in life. I mean, it's just one element of the world we live in, so I use it.
Up until quite recently, you've been fairly reluctant or unwilling to actually write about your work or talk about it. I mean, do you feel now more confident, or do you feel that you should be talking, or what?
Well, yeah, I mean, this, doing something like this is a struggle, but I think for, in the early years, I had this naive idea that the work should speak for itself, but of course that's not, doesn't actually work like that. I think if the work becomes certain, well known to a certain extent, then people start writing about it anyway, and it's a bit like Chinese whispers, you know. Certain, if there's only a few articles written by misinformed people, if that's all that there is about you, then those articles like take on an importance that they shouldn't have. So I did my first piece of writing in a way just to try and set the record straight. That was the reason for for doing the statements, the 5-6 pickup sticks. I think art is a very moral activity. It doesn't. It doesn't threaten people. It doesn't use people. It's It sort of humanizes us, I hope. My work really is just about being just a human being and living on the planet, using nature as its source. I mean, on another level, it's also about making art of other things that I... by doing things that I enjoy. You know, I actually... it's not really about a struggle, you know, I actually enjoy thinking about ideas, I actually enjoy camping and being on my own, and you know, the whole business of you know, lighting fires or choosing a campsite and sleeping on the ground, you know, I always get my best sleep, you know, on some stony patch somewhere. I love the whole kind of ritual and rhythm, you know, the very simple rhythm of being on a walk. It's just like sort of getting up with the sun and making breakfast and like walking all day and, you know, being very tired in a very physical, simple way. It's, apart from anything else, it's just a very good way to live life. Somehow I've found a way to make it into art.
And presumably that is really the source of your work, that physical involvement in and with nature.
Yes, it is. Yes. You said it.